It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Anxious residents in Austin have been spending another restless night in their homes. That while police investigate the latest explosion in their community. The blast injured two men in their 20s. We are told they are hospitalized with serious injuries. Austin Police Chief Brian Manley is warning residents to stay indoors throughout the night and not to open any unexpected packages. He added that police believe the blast might be related to three bombings over the last 10 days. In those attacks, two people were killed and two others injured.
We now need the community to have an extra level of vigilance and pay attention to any suspicious device, whether it be a package, a bag, a backpack, anything that looks out of place, and do not approach it.
The bombings have had an impact on Austin's popular South by Southwest Festival. Police increased their presence as organizers urge attendees to be on alert. Over the weekend, a 26-year-old man was arrested after making a threat at the event. Police say Trevor Ingram emailed a bomb threat, prompting a massive sweep of the area. No bomb was found, but organizers canceled a Roots concert. That plus the latest explosion is causing more anxiety for residents.
People are still traumatized. The fact that somebody could even bring a bomb into the community.
That could have been me. I get packages all the time. My roommates get packages all the time. So it hits home.
You can really see that it's hitting home to a lot of people who live in that neighborhood. No motive is known, but police suspect it could be a hate crimes related event because all the victims targeted have been black or Hispanic. Police are now offering rewards totaling $115,000 for information leading to the arrest of the killer or killers.
Kelly Wright of Fox News. It's just, isn't that something? For those of you in the Austin area, it's very frightening when something like this happens in your community. I will never forget being in Washington, D.C. During the sniper attacks. I was a president of Concerned Women for America then, living alone. And, of course, the shooter was just killing people randomly, service stations, public parking lots. It was really very frightening. Even though, I trust God, I'm not afraid to die, but I surely wasn't crazy about being shot by a sniper, while I'm getting gas or in a parking lot. So these are scary times, and what in the world, why would a person do this? I don't know if the two young men who were seriously injured last night were black. We don't know. They're telling us. I know the other two victims were black and they were killed. And then there was an older black woman. They were either Hispanic or black or both. And so, so you heard Kelly say maybe a hate crimes. But, in these dark, horrible, deceptive times, it could also be someone who doesn't care about life, but wants to build into the narrative that conservatives hate people of color. It could be that. I mean, because that's how deceptive and unbelievable things have become. You just can't trust. So we don't know. We just don't know until we know. And we just hope the Austin police finds out as quickly as possible so this can be put to an end. The school walkout. Over speaking of violence and unexpected violence, the shootings in Parkland, of course, caused a spat of nationwide protests from students across the country, and we're still learning things about those protests. One Ohio student, by the way, was refused for leaving the class during the gun control walkout, so he was suspended for staying in class while the other kids left. I think there was a teacher who got in a great deal of trouble because she told kids they didn't have to participate. And this came to my mind, into my inbox. This kid, David Hogg, who's become kind of the spokesperson for this, he's described in the article I hold in my hand as a student and victim of the mass shooting. I don't know how he could be the victim. I don't think he was shot, but that's kind of the way, you know, because he was there in the building and because some of the other kids were there in the building, somehow this is the manipulation of sympathy and emotion. Because realistically, you know, I had friends that were killed in horrible car accidents when I was a teenager, and it was very, it was so difficult to come into class and see their seats empty. This happened a lot when kids were beginning to drive. I don't hear too much about it now. I'm sure it's happening now, but I wasn't a victim of it. I was certainly grieved. I remember going to the hospital, hearing one of my classmates screaming in the emergency room before she died. I saw her dad sign the death warrant. Okay, so I'm just saying, look, a lot of us have a front row seat to tragedy. That doesn't make us the victims. But David Hogg, of course, is presenting himself as the expert. Of course, he's doing this all on his own. Remember that David Hogg and his 16 and 17-year-old friends are organizing this entire protest because, of course, they know so much about the National Rifle Association, about the Second Amendment. We know that, you know, in public schools, they learn a great deal about that. And so, being facetious. So David Hogg has made a video, a minute long, on his Facebook page. And I want you to listen, especially to the first part, because he says something. Because he says something so vulgar. And I'll just give you a heads up on it. He says the politicians are the B. Fill in the blanks of the NRA. Politicians are the B of the NRA. I'll let you listen to him say it.
What if our politicians weren't the B of the NRA?
It doesn't make sense that I have to wait till I'm 21 to get a handgun, but I can get this weapon at 18. I don't know.
We didn't address it, Mr. President. But I think
you know why? Because you're afraid of the NRA, right?
What if we all voted and said this is not okay?
It was an incredibly exciting election night in a district there never should have been a question that the Republicans should have won. They're sending a Democrat from the heart of Trump country.
Voters are sending a message. And if the president isn't hearing it, a whole lot of other people are.
What if we stood up as Americans and fought for our freedom and our children's lives?
Everybody is saying politicians who are corrupt, politicians who are accepting money from these organizations, you can't run from us. We are the people who voted you in, and we are the people who will vote you out.
My name is David Hogg, and I stand with the Never Again movement. Join us on March 24th as we march for our lives and the future of America.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know he was a video producer. He's really talented, 17-year-old, to do all of this all by himself. A remarkable kid. The politicians are the bees of the NRA. I'm sure that David has a long history with the NRA, knows all about them. And all about the Second Amendment. As I said before, I want to drive the point home. He's advertising now for this March for Our Lives in Washington on March 24th, wanting more kids to come out and show their support. And of course, remember that this is not political. No, it's not a political movement. They're just trying to save the children's lives, just in case you get confused. And to further prove the point that it's not political, this is a high school protest in San Francisco last Wednesday. Pretty good sized crowd. You can see it in the video. The kids raise their fists and chant a slogan. They are instructed to repeat after the person on the bullhorn the following. I want you to listen to it, then I'll tell you exactly what it is that they're saying and where it comes from. Let's listen.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
Oh, wow, where
are we? It is our duty to win.
We must love and protect one another.
We must love and protect one another.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to win.
It is our duty to win.
We must love and protect one another.
We must love and protect one another.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
We have nothing to lose but our chains.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom.
It is our duty to fight for our freedom. Yeah. It is our duty to win!
We must love and protect one another!
We must love and protect one another!
We have nothing to lose but our chains!
We have nothing to lose but our chains!
Ashe!
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 Those are kids, high school kids in San Francisco, repeating after someone calling out the chant who probably doesn't even know, but I can tell you that the basis of this chant comes from the Communist Manifesto. But the exact words were penned by a Black Panther. Black Panther was a communist radical organization in the 60s that killed lots of people. This particular person that wrote this particular piece of poetry, if you want to call it that, this chant, was a Black Panther who herself personally killed a policeman. It is our duty to fight for our freedom. It is our duty to win. We must love and protect one another. We have nothing to lose but our shame, our shame, our shame. These are your kids being propagandized in public school. And don't tell me it isn't happening in your school. This is what I've heard that argument for more than two decades. Parents calling in when I would try to tell them what was happening in public school. We have a really good school, and our teachers are great, and that's just not happening. And I'm telling you, it is happening. It may be more subtle. You may have more trouble. It's happening in textbooks. It's happening in lectures. There are things happening that they're not allowed to tell their parents. Not allowed. I remember all of that when it changed, and now it's pretty firmly entrenched. And by the way, they're planning another walkout on April the 20th on the anniversary of Columbine. So one person that I know, many people, are saying this is the job of state legislatures. They better get after it, because they cannot allow our kids to be the unwitting pawns of the left, stirring them up and poisoning their minds about things that they're just their kids. They don't know. And we are sending them off to school, and they're being filled with this kind of junk that's going to come back. You think it's bad now? It's only going to get worse. By the way, a New Jersey school said they would punish schools kids who participated in the walkout. So some schools took a hard line. There's a district of in Connecticut where the parents have hired an attorney, and they're going to sue the school for using their kids for political purposes. There's actually a statute about that. You know, I'm going to put that aside. We'll do a whole show on that with an expert. Speaking of guns, here's an article that just came out. Trying to find the source here. The writer is Ryan Saavedra. Last Wednesday, acting FBI Director David Bowditch testified during a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing that former President Barack Obama's Department of Justice forced the FBI to delete over 500,000 fugitives who had outstanding arrest warrants from the National Instant Criminal Background Check System. So, wait a second. Didn't Barack Obama and Eric Holder and others, don't they want to, tighten up our background check system? Well, not for people that they like. You see, this is how this is played. It's going to be aimed for people they don't like. Little loopholes, little ways of keeping people from being able to arm themselves, like John Cornyn's bill that's going to be probably in the omnibus, which we're going to talk about in a second, which is stopping veterans from being able to arm themselves because of a certain provision in it. It's going to be, it's like the selective few will get to have, just like I saw a picture of another politician. Who was that? It was Bernie Sanders talking to kids when they were doing their gun protest. He's all in for them, He's their big champion. And he's there talking about, this terrible shooting and how horrible guns are with bodyguards. He's got bodyguards. I saw the picture. That's how it goes. Some people can have guns and be guarded, but others can't. And I think we're mostly the others. So then we go back to these kids. How did they get so radical? How are they becoming radicalized? Here's the former attorney general. He was speaking in Wisconsin just last week. He says, we have to be ready to, to the extent that they want to have a fight, let's do it. You want to rumble? Let's rumble. You want to have a knife fight? We're going to do it. Well, that's the former Attorney General of the President of the United States, Barack Obama. How did things get so uncivil? I just am not sure. Maybe there's a lot of incivility underneath the surface, a lot of violence waiting to bubble up, because the intents of the hard left are wicked, and they will result in violence at some point. This week is a big week in Congress. It's the week for this big spending bill, and we're going to talk about it because it's not good news. It's not good news. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Today, moral relativism and political correctness are assaulting truth.
How can the world have hope when believers themselves aren't clear on the authority of the Bible?
The Church of Jesus Christ always faces a tremendous temptation to deviate from the Word of God.
The God who speaks clearly expresses God's intent in giving us His Word and the response that is demanded of those who hear.
Nobody ever encounters God and says, "That was boring and irrelevant." When people say that about the Bible, it just says to me they've not encountered the God of the Bible.
Our faith is rooted in history, and consequently we need to use the evidence and never be afraid of it.
The God Who Speaks is a feature-length documentary from the American Family Association, which could bolster your confidence in the Word of God.
Churches really need to see this, really need to understand what the Bible actually is.
Available now at thegodwhospeaks.org.
In Bhutan, where nearly 78% of the population is Buddhist, can the gospel of Jesus Christ make inroads? Hi, I'm Don Shank, director of the Tide Global Radio Ministry, and this is today's Global Update. Bhutan is relatively closed to the gospel and is one of the least evangelized nations. But in 2012, the Tide Ministry began Christian broadcasting in Dzongka, the official language of Bhutan. Please join us in praising God for pastors that are helping to transition curious listeners into committed believers who stand firm in their faith. A pastor who works with the Tide Partner Ministry in Bhutan recently shared this about a new believer. The listener and his wife are Buddhist, but listen to our radio program. Slowly they want to believe in the Lord and are interested in taking baptism. Please uphold them in your prayers. To find out how you can get involved in the Tide radio work and help us share the gospel in Bhutan and around the globe, visit thetide.org. That's thetide.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
For decades, Americans have been enthralled with the romance of Walt Disney movies, from Sleeping Beauty to Cinderella. The prince and the princess live happily ever after. But soon, the princess and the princess could live happily ever after. The director of Frozen is strongly hinting that Elsa could be getting a girlfriend. Nothing set in stone, but Huffington Post reports they are exploring the idea. The 2013 animated film was praised for what was perceived as a pro-gay theme, including the lyrics of the theme song, Let It Go. It would not be the first time Disney has dabbled in the LGBT-themed programming. The Disney Channel television show Andy Mack features an openly gay character. And the live-action movie version of Beauty and the Beast, well, features what the director called an exclusively gay moment. Whatever Disney decides, it might be a good idea for moms and dads to brace for some very interesting questions from the little ones. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. You know, something else happened last week that you might have missed. You know, it's like when you cross the state line, do you ever feel the bump? We always used to laugh about that. Oh, it's Tennessee. Did you feel? Okay. All right, so last Thursday there was a major bump, but you might not have felt it. And that bump was that the national debt exceeded $21 trillion for the first time. And you might not know that it actually hit $20 trillion on September the 8th. That's how fast the debt is increasing. And that doesn't include all the spending that has taken place since February when Congress, under the leadership of Paul Ryan, and we'll have to put Mitch McConnell in that bag too, have been passing some bills that are just absolutely unbelievable. And this week, here comes another one. The one thing I notice about this particular spending bill is that you're not hearing anything about it. I'm not hearing anything about it. Maybe you are. But to me, it's media radio silence. And so I've asked Wes Denton to join me this morning. Wes is with the Conservative Partnership Institute. Wes worked on Capitol Hill for 17 years. He was the communications director for Senator Jim DeMint. He now works with former Senator DeMint in this new project called Conservative Partnership Institute. Also, before that, he served with Congressman Joe Wilson. And Wesley, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sandy. It's a pleasure to be with you.
And secondly, looking at the dates here, I think that you were with Joe Wilson when he yelled, "You lie," from the from the House floor.
I just missed it by a few months, but
oh, you did.
No, he's a hero. He's a great guy.
He was. You know, I actually interviewed him then. I remember seeking him out and bringing him into the studio because I wanted to praise him, and he kind of equivocated. He got such blowback that he kind of equivocated, and I didn't want him to. But I digress. All right. So.
Well, go ahead.
No. Finish your thought.
Well, I was just going to say Joe's a very respectful person, and he's just I think the speaking out of turn is what caused him to be apologetic. But I don't think the sentiment that he raised and calling out the president was any less truthful. He just wished he had done it in a different context. But we're all very proud of the way he served South Carolina.
You know, Wes, I have to. Okay, I'm digressing into. I have been sitting in Judiciary Committee hearings in the Senate when Ted Kennedy was there and Patrick Leahy and Orrin Hatch. You fill in the blank. And honestly, I could hardly keep my mouth shut because I knew the records of the nominees they were discussing, and they were lying. The lies that came out of their mouths, and I felt so much like Joe Wilson. I could have easily been Joe Wilson myself. I wanted to shout out, "You lie," because it's really hard to sit there and take that kind of duplicity. But anyway, I want you to help us understand, Wes, what is. We've talked about so many spending bills, and people don't understand the procedures in D.C. So what is this omnibus, not the particulars yet, but why is this bill so important, and how is it that we have now this major, huge spending bill coming up this week?
Right. So if you remember a few weeks back, the House and Senate agreed to a two-year budget deal that blew past the spending caps. This has been a longstanding goal for appropriators and big spenders of both parties. And I think they were hoping that with the passage of the tax cuts and the noise from the Russia investigations and the DACA fight that they would sneak this under the radar of the American people, that people would notice that they're going to be increasing the debt by trillions over the next few years thanks to this deal. And so the spending was one that was set in that budget agreement. But what we hadn't had, the spending limits, but what we hadn't had is the actual legislation with the actual dollars being spent.
All right, so that, and that's due, is Friday the drop-dead date? Wes? Oh, wow. Okay, we lost him for a second. And I think Friday is the drop-dead date. Let's get him back. This is supposed to be the last major law that Congress will pass this year because they're busy, you see. This is an election year, and their priorities are to get themselves reelected. And there are so many provisions in this bill that are just hair-raising. And that's what I want to talk to Wes about when we get him back. It's as though the Republican leadership. I'm going to read the this is an article from The Federalist by Rachel Bovard. She says Republicans may have majorities in the House and Senate, but the only group they seem to care about pleasing are the Democrat minorities. As the next funding deadline approaches, Republicans in Congress are working on a $1.3 trillion spending bill that includes all kinds of provisions that fly in the face of campaign promises, principles, and even their party's platform. All right, that's the opening of this article. Wes, we lost you, so I'm glad you're back.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. I was just explaining that as we have often said, the Republican leadership is simply doing the bidding of the left. It is mind-boggling, and conservatives are helpless to stop this because they don't have the numbers. Let's walk down, honestly, if you don't mind, Wes, what you think the most egregious things that... Look, the language doesn't come out until tonight, right? We don't really know for sure.
That's right. We haven't seen it yet, but we have a pretty good idea based on the conversations they've been having around town. Now, I will say, yes, the leadership is very disappointing, but the truth is they actually believe in these policies. Unfortunately, they think moderating, this is a continual thing. We elect conservatives to Congress, they get here, and the leadership tries to convince them that moderating and passing more liberal legislation is going to keep them in power. So until they hear from the American people, that's the narrative that they set here. The things that could be included in this bill, unfortunately, are a bailout for Obamacare insurance companies to the tune of at least $30 billion. And we're unsure how in the world they're going to include Hyde protections in that, because if they were to include usual riders to stop taxpayer fundings from going to abortions, that would pretty much nullify every Obamacare plan that these insurance companies provide. So it's unlikely that they're going to be able to protect taxpayer money from going to abortions through those Obamacare bailouts. They're also considering extending the DACA program, the Obama amnesty, to young illegal immigrants in the bill in exchange for some border wall funding. But that would not include the ending of chain migration or the visa lottery program. They're also possibly including gun control legislation known as the Six-Nix Bill that the Gun Owners of America have said they will key vote against the bill if it's included. There's a earmark that President Trump really doesn't like for a New York and New Jersey underground tunnel project that's going to cost nearly $30 billion. And so it could be the largest earmark ever. It's called the Gateway Project, and that could be in there. They could include an internet sales tax, a national internet sales tax that has been long sought by large corporations, so that mom-and-pop stores and state-based stores will have to pay national sales tax over the internet. And then there's also an earmark for the leadership's political parties, the NRSC, the DCCC, which are incumbent protection groups that only support people who have already elected to Congress, and they want to raise the coordination limits for them, which would give the parties expansive power to fight back in primaries against conservative upstarts who are challenging incumbents in those seats in the Senate and the House. So groups like Club for Growth, Senate Conservatives Fund, House Freedom Fund, which is run by the House Freedom Caucus, Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows, they would have a harder time supporting conservative candidates if that were to pass.
Yeah, so let me listen, Wes, you just said it beautifully, but I want to go back and say it again in a different way. This is a way Mitch McConnell wants to make sure that incumbents are reelected. And I don't know if this would just be applied to the Senate, I guess. It wouldn't apply to the House yet, right?
No, it would apply to both to Republicans and Democrats and House and Senate campaign committees, but only the ones controlled by the political parties, the Democrat Party and the Republican Party. So if you're a conservative that likes to support conservative primary opponents to people you don't feel are serving you well, you would be disenfranchised under this, because the parties would have much higher spending limits than the conservative campaign groups.
So it's kind of like it's a different way of hurting and destroying conservative candidates. Like, remember when Paul Ryan, he may be still doing this, withheld re-election money from House Freedom Caucus members, and actually ran ads in their district to try to get them out. This is just going to take this a step further, isn't it?
It is, and it's unfortunate. The leadership and establishment of both parties don't like to be challenged, and the Republican leadership has teamed up with the Chamber of Commerce and some other large funding groups to try to stop upstart conservatives. But I worked for Senator Jim DeMint when he started the Senate Conservatives Fund back before 2010, and we kind of caught them off guard with Mike Lee, Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, Pat Toomey, Marco Rubio, and they were embarrassed and they didn't like being defeated in those primaries, and they've been working up to finding ways to make sure that doesn't happen again, and this is their latest attempt to try to shut down conservative primary opponents.
Severe, you know, of all the things, all of these things are serious, serious flaws. But that really has some long-lasting impact on all these issues, Wes. It's really appalling. One thing you didn't mention, I know you meant to, was that in this omnibus bill, we think there will be absolutely full funding for Planned Parenthood. And also that there will be no conscience protections for health providers. Anything more? Any more detail about that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I talk to people all the time, and they are so thankful that we won the last election. But that's what's so frustrating for folks, is they would never believe that after winning both houses of House and both sides of the Congress, House and Senate, the presidency, and most state houses, that Republicans are going to write funding bills that include over $500 million for Planned Parenthood, which is basically not only funding their opposition, who are trying to defeat them in their elections upcoming in the fall, it's going to continue the immoral practice of funding these organizations that kill the innocent and the unborn. And they're really not putting up much of a fight to try to stop that, because they're seeking Democrat votes for the bill, because what they did is they wrote such an atrocious big spending bill that's going to balloon the debt. They're not trying to get conservative votes. They're trying to win liberal votes for the bill. And so it's very disappointing. And then another aspect that they're going to include, it seems, is funding for sanctuary cities. Even after the president has called for the ending of funding for sanctuary cities and for the criminal illegal immigrants who have been caught in these areas, and the fight that they're having currently between the Department of Justice and California, they're still going to actually proactively fund these cities that are flouting immigration law. And it's very disappointing.
That's like an understatement of the century. And this is why, Wes, it isn't hard to figure out why Republican voters in these primaries are having trouble getting motivated to go to the polls. They are supporting Trump and Trump's policies. They support the policies still. And, of course, we just saw in Pennsylvania in the election of Rick Saccone in that special election that Rick Saccone didn't, even though he's privately, as I understand it, a conservative, he did not campaign on conservative principles. He went the party line with broad themes like we passed tax cuts, and my opponent will support Nancy Pelosi. That was his arguments.
Well, we do need to say, and it's a great thing that the Republicans passed tax reform. The Republicans have worked with President Trump to confirm some of his conservative judicial nominees. And they've repealed a number of Obama regulations that were stifling the economy. These are great things, but they, you know, if you were to give them a report card, they're probably a D plus or C minus. There's so much more that people expected for them to do, and they're really just hoping that their signature achievement on tax reform is going to be enough to carry the day, and they seem like they're going to sit out the rest of the year. Which is unfortunate, because if you believe that the Democrats are as energized as they are, and that seems to be the view of Republican leadership here, that they're likely to lose a lot of seats in this upcoming election. Well, if this might be your last year of Republicans in charge of Washington in the House and Senate and the presidency, you'd think that they would try to get as many of their priorities passed as possible. But instead, it seems like they're laying their weapons down and just calling a truce to the Democrats and hoping that they don't get run over in November.
You know, let me just interject. For those of you listening, the way you're saying, what can we do? Well, the only thing you can do is to call your congressman and ask them to say no on this omnibus bill. No, absolutely not. And the problem is, Wes, of course, the Freedom Caucus have become our champions in the House, and their hands are tied because they don't have enough numbers. And if Paul Ryan is looking for Democrats, and why wouldn't they vote for this omnibus bill? It's got everything in it they want. Then that renders the House Freedom Caucus kind of, it just neuters them, does it not? 30 seconds.
It does in some sense, because they've been so strong in their principles that they're not being looked at for votes on this very bad bill, because they understand how leadership understands that there's no chance they're going to get them to vote for this. However, if the American people stand up and make their voices heard, every politician is susceptible to... to popular opinion, especially from their base, that they're hoping will come out in November and save them and save their leadership position. And when the rank and file hear from their constituents, it makes a difference. There's a lot of good people on Capitol Hill. They're scared to do the right thing too often, and they need the support of people back home.
Absolutely. All right. So we need to get on the phones and call our congressman and tell them to say no about this, and tell them that we really do support them. Wes Denton, Conservative Partnership Institute. Wesley, thanks for your time this morning. We'll talk to you soon.
God bless you.
Thank you. Same back to you, Wes.
I have set my bow in the cloud. and it shall be a sign of the covenant between me and the earth. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. Ken Ham has now installed permanent rainbow-colored lights at the Ark Encounter in Kentucky, so all can see that it is God's rainbow, and he declares its meaning in Genesis 6. The rainbow is a reminder that God will never again judge the earth with a global flood. Next time, it will be judged by fire. The ark is lit permanently at night with a rainbow to remind the world God owns it. And it is what he says it is. It's high time for Christians to take the rainbow back.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Join American Family Radio for In God We Trust, How Defending Christianity Helps Our Nation, a 30-minute radio special featuring author, speaker, and radio host Dr. Frank Turk.
We pulled out of society or didn't defend our beliefs, and society went godless, and we wonder why. When the rest of society went secular, we can see where we are now. It's really the church's fault.
Listen this Wednesday morning, 11 Central on American Family Radio.
You guys are doing a great work here, and I've seen lots of influences in my own life.
We're collecting stories of how God is using American Family Radio.
It inspires me to fight the good fight of faith.
Would you take a moment to share your story? These brief stories serve as big encouragement to those who partner with us financially and to those who are considering partnering with us. Phone 877-876-8893. That's 877-876-8893.
Oops, there's a piece I missed a little bit.
Grandpa, why do we always pick up litter when we go hiking?
Well, we're just making it nicer for people who come after us a little bit. It's called stewardship.
My grandfather taught me that you should always leave a place better than you found it. That it's important to invest in the lives of your children and grandchildren, leaving them with a godly legacy they can build on. That's why I decided to set up a charitable gift annuity with the AFA Foundation.
It's called stewardship.
I know that my gift will support a ministry that honors the biblical principles I hold dear, and it's a way to invest in the future of our country. The AFA Foundation also arranged for me to have a steady fixed income, so I don't have to worry in the midst of changing times.
Call the AFA Foundation today to find out how you can set up a charitable gift annuity. Just call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. I had a chance to speak to a group in Queens, New York last night about Abraham Lincoln. It prompted me to reflect on Civil War in his time and ours. Of course, Lincoln's presidency was defined by the cataclysmic struggle between the Union and the Southern states that wanted to secede from it. A similar, albeit undeclared and mostly nonviolent, conflict seems to be underway today. In my remarks, I cited an analysis of what might be called Civil War II, written by David Vincent Gilbert. I don't know the man, but found compelling his observation that, quote, the basic issue here is who decides who runs the country. When you hate each other but accept the election results, you have a country. When you stop accepting election results, you have a countdown to a civil war, unquote. This is Frank Gaffney. Check out the rest of my speech at securefreedom.org.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Now, Andrew McKay, the former deputy FBI director who was fired late Friday night, says the reason that he was fired was to undercut his credibility as a potential witness in the Mueller investigation. I want to put up some of Andrew McCabe's statement. This attack on my credibility is one part of a larger effort, not just to slander me personally, but to taint the FBI, law enforcement, and intelligence professionals more generally. It is part of this administration's ongoing war on the FBI and the efforts of the special counsel's investigation, which continue to this day. Congressman, your response.
Oh, Andy McCabe has undercut his credibility all by himself. He didn't need any help doing that. And I find it richly ironic that he is lamenting that those are attacking the FBI when he himself does the exact same thing. It was the FBI who said he made an unauthorized disclosure and then lied about it. That wasn't President Trump. It wasn't me. It wasn't the crazy House Republicans. It was his own fellow FBI agents that said he leaked and then lied about it. So if he's got credibility issues, he needs look no further than himself.
All right, that was Trey Gowdy, of course, talking with Chris Wallace on Fox News yesterday. Sandy Rios back with you. You knew I wouldn't not talk about Andrew McCabe today, didn't you? Yeah, so he was fired, what, less than 48 hours before he was scheduled to retire on Sunday with all of his full benefits as an FBI agent. Some people are saying, oh, that's terrible. How could they do that? They could do that because it is criminal. An FBI agent cannot lie before Congress. Will be fired. All kinds of agents are fired for much lesser offenses. Fired for lying on the time cards. Fired for driving their, lying about how they're using their official car. They are not allowed to lie. That's a huge bar. In fact, I'll read to you from Chris Swecker. He's a former FBI agent. He was with them for 24 years. He says, it's a serious mistake to assert that McCabe's firing was the result of some political vendetta. This was a simple case of an FBI executive who failed to set the highest ethical standards in his position as the number two person in the FBI. Simply put, FBI agents who are entrusted with the life, liberty, and property of our citizens through their investigative work cannot mislead, spin, nuance, or lie under oath. Their word is the currency of the realm. Andrew McCabe, the stated reasons are that he leaked to the press, to the Wall Street Journal, stuff to defend himself, and that he also he lied about it in his statements before Congress. Now, here's a really interesting wrinkle. I was not going to do this one next, but I'm going to. I don't see the article, but I'll tell you exactly what it says. James Comey, it looks like, because of Andrew McCabe's discovered disingenuousness and his statements, it looks like he may have gotten former director James Comey into deep trouble, because Comey had said that he didn't know or authorize any leaks. And McCabe said in his statement that others, including the director, knew about the leak that he authorized to the Wall Street Journal. So Comey, under oath, said, here's the question. Comey told Chairman Chuck Grassley that he did not authorize any leaks. Grassley said, have you ever authorized someone else at the FBI to be an anonymous source in a news report about the Trump investigation or the Clinton investigation? Comey replied, no. But Andrew McCabe said in his statement, he said, I was one of only a few people who had the authority to do that, meaning authorize a leak. So I think that, you know, there may be some more trouble here that we don't even know about. Others are saying that I'm reading, this is just the beginning. I think that's true. You know, whether we'll have people with the spine to carry this thing through. Look, Attorney General Sessions fired McCabe 48 hours less than before he was supposed to receive all of his benefits. That's pretty stunning. And for all the critics of General Sessions who were frustrated that he recused himself on the Russian matter, I was frustrated with that too. But I have said to you for months that he's doing a lot more than you think. And a lot of really good things are taking place. He's just not one to jump up and shout. He's actually one to actually do. And sometimes it's the people that constantly boast about what they're doing that aren't really doing that much. That's not the case with Attorney General Sessions. And so he's taking a huge hit now, of course, for firing him. That's terrible. It's political. He was pressed by the president. It had nothing to do with anything that Andrew McCabe did. It's just that it's a political move. And I can tell you that it's not. The way this works, there is an Office of Professional Responsibility at the FBI, and they adjudicate. There are FBI investigators who investigate their own agents when charges are brought. And then they recommend, they bring their findings to the Office of Public Information, Office of something, Public Responsibility, OPR. And then they assign attorneys, FBI hired, they're not necessarily agents, some are, to review the findings and to recommend punishment. And that's what happened. They reviewed the findings from the Inspector General, Andrew McCabe, and the OPR recommended firing him. So it wasn't President Donald Trump making a call. That's not how that happened. As though serious people would think that. But Andrew McCabe, if I were to recite to you, and I should just pause and kind of restate a little bit. It's not, look, you know, when you're trying, if you are a boss somewhere and you need to let go of an employee, you sometimes will use like one thing when there are many things that the employee has done that are maybe fireable offenses or are reasons why you don't want that person there. But you choose one or two things, and that's what you write down, and that's the centerpiece of your charges, if you want to call it that, against your employee. That's how it works. And so in the case of McCabe, yeah, those two things are true. You can bet they're true. They would not be bringing those charges. Trust me, those have been vetted 100 million times. Well, I'm exaggerating. A few hundred times before the charges are going to be brought. But there are more things you see about Andrew McCabe, more egregious things. I've mentioned many times that he was overseeing the email investigation for Hillary Clinton. Now, the timeline about when he started and when he stopped is a little uncertain. It's like within weeks, one way or the other, of the time that his wife was given $700,000 by Terry McAuliffe, who was one of Clinton's chief fundraisers for years. And now a payback, you know, they helped him become governor of Virginia. Terry McAuliffe is nothing more than a fundraiser. So Terry McAuliffe gave Jill McCabe $700,000 to run for Senate. And by the way, the rules in Virginia are if you don't spend all of your campaign money, you can keep it, your personal cash. So, and Andrew McCabe was actually with his wife when this deal was made. And then he was the one overseeing the Clinton email scandal. So you'd think there might, I don't know, it doesn't. And I've already told you that the Hatch Act prevents FBI agents from being involved in campaigns. And Andrew McCabe violated that rule. And I could go into more detail about that, but that's enough. It gives you an idea. Andrew McCabe was also the agent that called Michael Flynn a few days after the Trump administration and his people got into the White House. The FBI had been working with General Flynn on security and just organizing. You know, you could imagine, new office, new building, what's going on. So the agents had been coming by to chat, and so Andy McCabe's office called Michael Flynn's office and says, hey, there are a few agents coming by, and they just want to talk to you for a second. And General Flynn says, sure, come on in. So they came on in and proceeded to interrogate him based on this conversation that he had with the Russian, was it Kislyak, foreign minister, I think is his title, illegally obtained the conversation between General Flynn and the Kislyak. It had the transcript. He didn't know that. General Flynn didn't know that. And they proceeded to ask him questions. He was not under oath. He didn't have an attorney present. I don't think he realized, only he could say this for sure, that he was being interrogated. And they asked him questions, pointed questions about that conversation, which he had had. As I recall, he was on vacation when he had that conversation and didn't. Basically, they set him up. That was McCabe's doing. And then, of course, when General Flynn was indicted, Andrew McCabe, I know this from people in the FBI. It was like he was on a conference call with agents around the country. And the word came down during that conference call that General Flynn had been indicted. And he delivers an expletive of joy. And then does a high five to the people around him. That's how objective Andrew McCabe was about General Flynn. General Flynn, a war hero, a man who was then ruined financially, and also his reputation by the allegations brought against him. So I could go on about McCabe, but maybe that gives you an idea of why I don't have a lot of sympathy. And also, you know, justice needs to happen to all of us. Justice. Look, when I was a kid and I got spanked for something or punished, it was good for me because I can't get away with stuff. And neither can. The problem is we let too many people get away with too many things. If you're an agent, you know you cannot lie, especially to Congress, and you're not to be leaking information. And all the other things he did where he tried to undermine a national election because he was a Mrs. Clinton supporter. At least he's never said that in writing, but the actions indicate that. And same thing for Comey. You can't just decide you don't like a candidate, and then you're a trusted law enforcement officer, the highest in this land, and you use your power to destroy the man that won the election. That's what they were doing. And I have something else I want to tell you. I've got lots of things I want to tell you, but this one I just have to get to. I just found this out. This came out March the 16th. It's written by Molly Hemingway. You're familiar with Molly. She's always on Fox and the Special Report. I love Molly. This is what she writes. Newly discovered text messages obtained by the Federalist reveal two key federal law enforcement officials conspired to meet with the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, FISA, judge who presided over the federal case against Michael Flynn. All right, let me make this simple. Rudolph Contreras was the FISA court judge. Remember, the FISA court is a secret court. It's the court in which they introduced the phony dossier on President Trump. It's a secret court. You don't know who the judges are. We didn't know before this mess. And only a few people ever go into that court. My husband was one of those attorneys that represented the FBI who went into that court a lot. And so they take great care with the information they present. They make sure that every tiny bit of it is accurate. And if it isn't, they can't bring that evidence. So the judges look at it. They trust the FBI, or the attorney general signs off, the head of the FBI. They trusted those agencies, and they would sign off. But it looks now like, remember, Rudolph Contreras was the judge who was presiding in the Michael Flynn case, who accepted the guilty plea from Michael Flynn, and then was suddenly recused. Do you remember that? Remember hearing that story? Contreras was suddenly recused from that case, and we don't know why. It's always been silent. Well, now it looks like Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. Remember, Peter Strzok is the agent. Oh, this is complicated. I realize we need a flow chart. Who was having the affair with Lisa Page. They were both working on the Hillary email. They were both working on Mueller's investigation. After the FBI sent them to Mueller's investigation to add their part to that. But it turns out that Peter Strzok was personal friends with Rudolph Contreras, the judge. And actually now there are text messages back and forth between Strzok and Page trying to set up an evening social event where they could have some conversation with this FISA court judge who's going to be hearing all these things on Trump and also on Michael Flynn and have a little chat and nobody would notice. They actually say, here, I'll read it to you, suggested a social setting with others would probably be better than a one-on-one meeting. Have to come up with some other work people to cover for action. So that's just a part of it. And so now we know that not only they were conspiring to meet with Contreras, the FISA court judge, to talk about Flynn and all the other, well, we don't know, I guess we can only assume they wanted to talk about Flynn and all the other, the dossier and all the other things. And whether that meeting took place, we don't know, but this we do know. The email between Peter Strzok and Lisa Page was redacted by the FBI before it went to investigators. Redacted. Those email that show you that Peter Strzok had a relationship with the FISA court judge and was reaching out to try to meet with him to have a little chat. The FISA court judge who was overseeing Flynn's case and then was suddenly recused from the case. What's with all of that? And so when James Comey says something like, you know, soon we'll be able to judge who is honorable and who is not. That was his threat to President Trump. John Brennan is kind of the same thing. When the full extent of your venality, moral turpitude, and political corruption becomes known, you will take your rightful place as a disgraced demagogue in the dustbin of history. And so that's a... Yeah, we'll see. We'll just see who the demagogues and the liars are, won't we? Because I do think that truth has a way of cutting through all of this, at least in due time. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.